to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Everywhere you go in this craft beer industry, you meet people, have a chat, and very quickly realise if you are also from the industry, there are about 3 degrees of separation between everybody. Everyone knows someone who's worked for The Goat, James Squire, Feral, Creatures, or Matilda Bay. In this case, we have a brewery on the Balmain Peninsula filled with people who have spent time at Bolter, Modus Operandi, The Rocks, Four Pines, Stoner Wood, and Little Creatures. That sounds like a pretty good mix of experiences on which to base a new brewing venture, I reckon. And so was born White Bay Brewing Co., co-founded by some well-known names, the Timms, Condon and Fishwick, Adam Tripp-Smith, Jess Walker, and my guest this evening, Dennis DeBoer. Joining White Bay after stints at Oscar Blues, Stoner Wood, and Modus Operandi, you could say he has paid his dues. So to find out what it's like to start a brand new brewery in the middle of a bloody pandemic, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Head Brewer Dennis DeBoer.
Thanks for having me.
Mate, finally, it is great to have you on. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Well, it's great to be on.
Mate, the clever people amongst you will notice a little bit of a twang in your accent. Tell us about where you grew up.
I grew up in the great state of Colorado in the United States and spent the first 25 years of my life there.
Yeah, there you go. So pretty much being in that great state with all of its great produce and its great breweries, it was always going to be beer for you, was it?
I think Colorado does two things correctly, skiing and beer. Yes.
I like that. When did you first sort of, you know, dive into the whole home brewing thing?
It was really when I was fresh out of uni and the old man and I just started making it in the garage.
Oh, together?
Just as a hobby. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Was he an ex-brewer or did you start together?
No, we just started together. We found the book on the recommendation of some friends and honestly hadn't even considered the notion that you could make beer at home. And yeah.
What was the book? Do you remember?
I believe it was...
The old classic, How to Brew?
It was a homebrewing book by Charlie Papazian. So I remember the author. Oh. I don't remember the title, but
I was expecting it to be the John Palmer one, but that seems to be everybody else's first book.
Well, the John Palmer one was a bit more advanced than the old Chuck Papazian. Very from humble beginnings.
Were you, Kit and Kilo? Were you initially?
Yeah, absolutely. But we pretty quickly went to all grain. I think the DeBoer trade is to. If you're in, you might as well be all in. So pretty quickly we were both thousands of dollars invested.
And how quickly before DeBoer and Son started pumping out some pretty decent beers?
I can't say any of them were decent, but it was lucky enough that we visited our local homebrew shop several times a week. And actually attached to that shop was a small sort of microbrewery. And I bothered them enough to allow me to work in their homebrew shop stockroom.
Oh, cool.
And basically mop the floors in the brewery at night.
I thought you were going to say something a little bit more glamorous than that, but mopping the floors is a good start.
Yeah. Well, when you're at the bottom, there's no direction but up.
Oh, that is a great way to look at it, I reckon. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Oscar Blues over that way was your first gig in terms of a proper gig in the brewing industry, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
What a great place to get started. So I think Oscar started early 2000, 2002 or something like that. So I'm tipping by the time you joined, it was pretty well established. Was it always going to be like a stepping stone to bigger things because you'd be walking into this fully established brewery and have to pay your dues and then maybe you might need to get your break elsewhere? Was that kind of the idea?
Well, I'd interviewed at Oscar Blues, I think, 4 times before they hired me.
I say 5th time's the charm.
That's right. And it was for a packaging line position. And that line was intense. So I'm trying to think when when I started with them, we were brewing somewhere in the neighborhood of 50,000 barrels a year, which is
70 liters.
It's a lot.
A lot. Okay. It's too late to do meth tonight.
Yeah. Let me think. I think 5,000 barrels is 1 million liters. So, you know, 10 million liters a year.
That's a lot of beer.
So we were canning a lot. And luckily I had been there a few months and they had just started an assistant brewer program. So at the time there were three full-time brewers and then the head brewer, and they were looking to bring an assistant brewer on. And I managed to secure that position.
Was that a bit like an apprenticeship?
It kind of was. Yep. Yeah. And it was the first position they had offered at that brewery in Longmont. But it turned out to be you were just sort of the night shift slave for, I think I was on that shift for like 11 months. Yeah, but learned a lot. Learned a lot about brewing and certainly a lot about myself. Oscar Blues was a great company to cut my teeth in.
And that's where you met DJ, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we worked together for, it was a little over 4 months. And he had come out with a crew. It's when Oscar Blues had made the decision to open a brewery in North Carolina. And so DJ and I think it was three other brewers from North Carolina that OB had hired came out to basically test drive our 50 barrel brew kit and sort of learn the ropes so they could commission and run their rapidly growing brewery out there.
Ah, right. Okay. Was he a little bit like your beer Yoda?
DJ?
Yeah.
I feel like maybe if I was Chewbacca, he would be.
Han Solo.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So how did the whole plan to come to Australia come about?
I sort of hit a point in the company where they said, you know, unless somebody dies or gets a better job somewhere else, you know, there's not a whole lot that's going to change in the company.
Right. Okay.
I loved my job. I love where I was at, but yeah, I just sort of decided, okay, well, if I'm going to try to make this long term before I commit to like buying a house or consider getting married or something, maybe I'll go and travel. So yeah, I just sort of thought Australia's always sounded cool. Maybe I'll go there. And really the intention when I came out here originally was to, you know, try to get a job in a brewery for a little bit and then hopefully get involved with the hop harvest. And then I hadn't reached out to anyone, but was exploring options and looking into doing some malting with Barrett Burston or, you know, someone just to sort of broaden my raw material horizon with the intention to always go back to Colorado and work at Oscar Blues. So that was like 6 years ago.
Okay. Rate, review, and subscribe. Three words that strike a chord in every sensitive 44-year-old podcaster who dreams of telling stories of craft beer. And something that I talk about a lot, but it really can get this little potty into more ears and therefore grow craft beer for all of us to enjoy. So even if you listen elsewhere, if you've got an iPhone, you've got Apple Podcasts, and therefore you can help out the show. Those three words, rate, review, and subscribe. Before we move on to the next stage of your career, I need to talk about something that's still American-based, and it's the fact that you and I share a common love, and I don't mean it in a weird kind of love triangle kind of way, but I just have to say that we both are massive fans of Hialeah IPA from Cigar City Brewing. I feel like we're kind of kindred spirits now, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I love that beer. I just wanted to know, have you ever brewed a cheeky Hialeah influenced beer on a commercial scale for your pro career and pretty much called it your own? Have you ever cheated?
I can't say I have.
Oh, damn. I thought you might have said yeah. As a special limited release.
Yeah, it's good food for thought though, you know, because we're still, we try to do a new IPA about once a month. So
yeah. Hey, you know, when you talk about, you know, you talk about bands and songs and albums that, you know, that have influenced other bands, that sort of thing. I'm just wondering, what were the beers, the breweries and the brewers that influenced you?
I certainly drew a lot of inspiration sort of from the crew I worked with at Oscar Blues. And I mean, to this day, those guys, whether they're still with the company or have gone on to do other things, have always been a massive inspiration. So, you know, Tim Matthews there, who is, I'm not even sure what his position is. He seems to change it every 6 months. But head of raw material, extremely focused and driven on exploring everything about beer. So, you know, he was the first guy who told me, you know, an IPA isn't, you know, hops sure are in an IPA, but what makes an IPA is the malt. And think about the malt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, Juice out there, again, just another guy who's really inspired me to question and consider everything. So, yeah, I draw a lot of inspiration and still talk to some of those guys on somewhat regular basis.
I actually met a couple of them. I have no idea what their names were, but they came down to Tassie for a hop harvest 1 year.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to share beers with them at the bar at the Winston one night.
You would have met Tim for sure.
Probably at the time,
a larger gentleman.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that, but I was thinking that, and he gave me a sticker.
Yeah. Yep. Nice. So actually, on the back of that visit is when he came, he went to Sydney afterwards, and we did a brew together when I was at Modus.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Modus, that was pretty much where you cut your teeth in terms of your brewing career in Australia, and it was probably what could have been considered the golden era for Modus. Well, are you going to take all of the credit for that?
No.
I didn't think you would.
A small cog and a rapidly growing machine. Yeah.
So, I mean, you were there for about 4 years. Was calling time at Modus difficult for you? I mean, you talked about it, you know, being hard to come from Oscar, but was it just time to try that once again, you know, try a new adventure, start something new? And because then you went traveling, didn't you?
Yeah. It was a difficult decision. We had built a really good team. I felt like had a really good established program of beers, but yeah, I mean, it was 4 years of burning the candle from both ends. So certainly was, and I, you know, they even offered to, you know, if I take time to come back.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
But, you know, at the time, Jess and I had all sorts of thoughts. You know, for a while we were considering on going to the States and staying there for a while.
Yep.
Yeah. I think the break was necessary, but it wasn't the easiest thing to leave by any means.
And you spent some time in New Zealand. Did you just drink yourself silly with all those great IPAs over there?
Actually, we didn't. We sort of we hiked ourselves silly.
Oh, right.
But
so it's good for that as well over there.
It was, and you know, embarrassingly, we sort of figured we might give wine a try. You know, Jess is from the Barossa, so she's done something like 9 vintages, and we both enjoy drinking wine. And I thought maybe I'll try that out. And so we lasted about 6 weeks into a vintage and just decided this really isn't for me.
So hold on. You were not drinking the wine, making your own wine at a winery, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, luckily for us, it didn't work out because otherwise it would be no great beers coming out of White Bay.
Yeah. But we were living in Nelson.
Yep.
And when we left the vintage, we pretty much spent every day hiking. But where we lived, we were, I don't know, 40 minutes from Freestyle Farms, who are kicking out some amazing hops.
Yep.
And so Freestyle's luckily attached to Candeli, or right across the road from Candeli Winery. So we went up there a few times and then had a few tours through Freestyle while we were in the neighborhood. And it was just really cool. Again, a chance to sort of stay involved, but not be involved. You know, while we were also in the South Island, we did a little road trip. We went down to Gladfield. We checked out their operation. Nice. And it was great to see Doug and Gabby and all the cool things they're doing down there.
And then, what, one day the phone rang.
That's exactly it. Yeah. We got the call. Yeah.
Who was on the phone?
It was Adam.
Can I ask you, by Adam, we're talking about Adam Tripp Smith. Is he like the Simon Cowell of the Australian beer industry? I mean, he knows enough people, he can recognise talent, and has enough influence to be able to put together an amazing boy band, or boy and girl band in this situation.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he knows everyone, and he's got good rapport with everyone. I mean, he's certainly really good at, I think, working with people, and yeah, as you said, just putting teams together.
Put the team together, and it was and very quickly White Bay came together. And is it right that you then quickly traveled back for a face-to-face meeting to Australia just to see whether this was all going to fit?
Yeah, so it was a 24-hour trip. Yeah, so flew into Sydney. Sort of at the time, we were considering two different sites, or by we, basically the other three partners. And we almost settled on a site in Leichhardt, but this spot on the Balmain Peninsula came up, and while Jess and I were here, we were able to put our two cents in and say, we definitely need a bigger warehouse. Yeah.
When you talk about a bigger warehouse, it's fucking massive, isn't it? It's 1,400 square meters or something I saw.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. The plan is to have room to swing a few cats. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the old building? I can't remember exactly what it was, that it was an old what?
Well, it was originally a steelworks
turn
of the century. And then we inherited it from, it had been a stage set building warehouse for, I think it was close to 30 or 35 years. And so when we moved in, literally anything that would hold dust had about 6 inches of MDF dust on it.
Did you find any cool old stuff from either the movie sets or from the old steelworks days in there?
Fortunately not. No, we inherited like a 200 liter barrel of gear oil, which which we got to dispose of. Yeah. But there's so much dust and, you know, old paint everywhere. I'm sure we'll uncover something cool one day.
And were you involved early on enough to be able to have some say in the brew kit that you installed?
Yeah. You know, when I started, the boys had been working with Tim on the size of the kit. Yeah. Basically, I threw a grant in there and steam jacketing on our mash tun.
Can we just dive in quickly for the nerds about how cool the steam jacketing on the mash tun is and why you wanted it so badly?
Yeah, we put it in so we could brew lager. So the plan, sort of from the get-go, our agreement in a group has always been, you know, our uniting beer is lager.
Nice.
And so the plan has always been that we have a lager in our foundation series of beers and something that's always on offer.
So I love that. It's kind of retro. You know, the big mainstream breweries have pretty much tarnished the art of brewing lagers a little bit, but slowly but surely people such as yourselves are bringing it back.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So, you know, where were you in the timeline of getting this whole thing started when the whole COVID lockdown threw a spanner in the works?
We were commissioning our brew house. So we had a team of three out from the States. They came out on a Monday. They were supposed to do three brews with us. They had done two and cut the trip short running to the airport because they were literally closing the border behind them.
Jeez.
So, yeah, and that was March 14, somewhere around there.
Yep.
Yeah. And so we released our first beers third week of April. So kind of
right
as the world was really shut down.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the beers because there's some rippers in the lineup here. I know it's pretty early days and, you know, things may change, but you have two core beers. You got your pale and your lager. And I find that's pretty interesting. Is that a byproduct of the pandemic or was that always going to be the original sort of idea?
We just thought we'd do something different, you know, and offer a pale and a lager. well, like I said, the lager's always been like a foundational beer for all of us. And so I think really starting out, we sort of had the idea that we were going to lead with a lager and sort of quickly came to the realization that if we wanted to do that, we might have some trouble paying bills. because while we're all gung-ho about it, we're not sure the rest of the world is yet. And so the pail was kind of the answer to that dilemma.
I mean, you got to be realistic sometimes, don't you? Sometimes you can go with your heart, but sometimes the head's just got to come and say, okay, we've got to keep the lights on kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
I mentioned that you've got two core beers, but in some ways you've kind of got three, but the third one, the IPA, just changes because I read that you always have an IPA available for your drinkers, but as one runs out, you run a new recipe through. So there is an IPA, but it's always changing. Is that more for the drinkers or the brewer to be remaining interested in things?
Look, I think both. I'm like, as far as my personal views, I like a smaller core range, and I think and my interpretation is that the drinker does as well, especially beer like an IPA, because everyone is brewing IPA and it's the hot word on the town. So for us to be able to change around and experiment and brew, you know, 3,000 liters a month of just something different, I think just works well for everybody. And it allows us to, you know, work with different hop breeding programs and different suppliers. And yeah, it keeps everything interesting on all fronts for us.
Oh, I like it. I just want to know who's in charge of naming them. You've got such cool names for them. There's like Common Ground, Embrace the Space, Thicker Things, Listless Drift Crusher, and Stack Up. Awesome names. I love them.
Yeah, that's me.
That's all you, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. What's your inspiration in terms of all that? Is there something that sort of that I don't understand that's bringing all those names together, a common theme, or you just like cool sounding things?
Yeah, they'll come to me in a dream, or I'll some of them I'll just hear in like an advertisement as I'm falling asleep on the couch. I don't have any deep seated you know, literary underlying themes or anything there. Yeah.
And in terms of all those IPAs that you've brewed, what do you think has been the most popular one so far? And what sort of beer, what sort of twist did you put on it?
I think and Thick of Things has been. It's certainly, and I'm wondering, it's certainly been our haziest beer. But, you know, Thick of Things basically started out as a scaled up version of our Sunny Pale.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. That we then just added a shitload more Aussie hops in the form of Vic Secret and then a ton of Simcoe Cryo and Centennial Cryo.
And is that a camellia bush on the label?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah.
Look at me go with my knowledge of all things, I don't know what it is, horticultural.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, with all the pictures thus far on all of our cans, it's literally photographs that we take on our walk to work. You know, Jess and I live a kilometer up the hill from the brewery. So it's sort of an ode to the shrubbery around the Balmain Peninsula.
Oh, that's a really nice way to you know, show that you're part of the community too. Do you talk about that much, or is it just we've got to drag it out of you?
Yeah, I think it's we mention it sometimes. I think there's a little blurb on the website. Maybe we should talk about it more. You know, those photos are captured.
Yeah, that's
captured on an iPhone 5.
An iPhone 5, even. Oh my God, it's I can't believe it's almost. I can't believe that's good enough to actually be able to print.
Yeah, it's not in black and white either. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's a really nice little twist, something I didn't expect. That's why I love doing this thing. I find things out. I think I'm coming in and I know a bit about what's going on, and then you throw a little thing like that at me, and that's a really cool story. I like that. Tell Tim Fishwick he needs to pump up the marketing around that little story.
I will. No.
So you mentioned Jess, your partner. She worked at Four Pines. And so she's now your work colleague as well as your partner. I used to work with my wife in banking many years ago, and all we did was when we got home was talk about work or the people at work. Are you guys the same, just always talking about beer?
Yes. Yeah.
Does that worry you or does it not matter?
Well, that's why we started drinking wine. So I guess I'll take a step back. Now we talk about beer and wine. Yeah. So we've taken on hobbies to not talk about beer so much.
I like it. So she's in charge of quality control and the lab, if I'm not mistaken. So does that mean that she's actually your boss?
More or less, Yes. And yeah, you know, especially these days, my role's a bit more admin focused. So she's on the floor. So yeah, I pretty much report directly to her.
You okay with that, mate?
Yes. Yeah.
So she wears the pants at home and she wears the pants in the office.
I'm used to it. Yeah.
That's good. You know, it's actually awesome when I read that this week that that you've actually invested in the whole lab setup. I mean, I think it really shows your dedication to making great quality beer because it is expensive and it's not always the first thing that new breweries invest in, is it?
Correct. Yeah. To me, it's, I don't know. For us, it was a small investment because that compared to a recall or, you know, the associated pains and dramas with that. It was kind of a minor investment when you think about that.
Yeah, no, good way to look at it. The tagline on your can says brought together by beer. And I really love that because I think it's a really nice play on how you all sort of came together. And I think those words is what beer is all about, which is basically getting together and smashing cans. I mean, enjoying each other's company. I think it's a ripping tagline.
Yeah, cool.
I know that obviously Tim Fishwick came from Balta. Did he maybe workshop that one with Sterling or someone like that to get another? Because they've got obviously their own cool tagline up there as well. Who came up with that one?
Oh, it's a good question. I'm actually not sure. We've been working with an exceptional graphic designer and artist named Ollie, who I think might have workshopped that one for us. Yeah.
Well, I've got to say it works. Along with what's your other one? Brew Classy, is it?
Working Classy. Yeah.
Working Classy. I like that. I like that. A little bit of a nod to Anchorman, perhaps?
I think so. Yeah. And a bit of a tip of the hat to the area we're from, which is
Working Class area, isn't it?
It was in the past, and now it's a bit gentrified.
Now, I mentioned cans. Obviously, you guys are all in on them. Was that kind of a saving grace for you with COVID? I mean, you had your own canning line, and all that beer was just able to go straight into cans. You didn't have to worry about kegs because you couldn't bloody serve them. You didn't have to wait for a mobile canner. And then you were just able to start selling it. Was that, in hindsight, a great decision?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was our saving grace. Very early on, before we got our first brew down, we were sort of kicking ourselves for being behind schedule. You know, the original thought was that we'd be brewing by the end of January. But had we hit that timeline, I'd, you know, think about all the beer we probably would have put into keg that might still be in a cool room today. So for us to be able to just change gears and say, no, we'll just put it all into cans was excellent. And, you know, on top of that, the local support we had, you know, our first day of trade, we literally had a lineup around the building of, you know, people had heard of us, but didn't know who we were. but we're just excited to, I think, get out of the house and come check out something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was literally just because of word of mouth, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was really cool.
That must have been so cool to see. So cool. And so are you now into kegs now that, you know, the bars are starting to open back up and that sort of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
Oh, nice. Nice. And that initial thing was basically you're pulling up a roller door, selling beers outside the roller door. But do you have plans at some stage soon to develop a, you know, a tap house kind of feel at the brewery, or are you sort of waiting to see what goes on with COVID and all that sort of thing before you dive into that part?
No, tap house is imminent. Yeah. Yeah.
So, imminent.
Yes.
Well, look out. Nice.
Yeah.
Have you started working on drawings and that sort of thing?
Yeah. We've been looking at drawings for quite a while. I think, you know, sort of our big struggle is getting our ancient building up to code.
Oh, right.
So I'm expecting sort of first quarter 2021.
Okay. That's not too far away.
We were all wishing for a venue for Christmas, but next Christmas for sure.
when you think of great tap houses, that sort of thing that you've been to in the past, what sort of ones inspired you to come up with this one at White Bay?
Oh, and something that stands out like immediately is, I think, Little Creatures.
For me, that is up there. Absolutely. If you could take that one and pop it in Balmain, I think you'd be doing quite all right, don't you?
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah.
Have you got water views from the brewery?
No. No, we have warehouse views.
They're just as good.
Yeah.
Water views are overrated, aren't they?
That's
really?
Right.
You can see those anywhere in Sydney.
Yeah, but we are, you know, as the crow flies, if you stood in front of the brewery, you could throw a rock over a roof and it landed Sydney Harbour.
Okay. And what about around you? I think when you first started out on this journey, there was a couple of other breweries, you know, not too far from you. Is that still the case? Did they survive COVID?
Yeah, yeah.
So who have you got nearby?
Oh, we've got Dave Padden right down the road.
My mate. I don't know anything about Sydney. He talks about Five Dock. You talk about Balmain. I got no idea whether they're close together or not.
To be perfectly honest, you know, when I was working at Modus, I thought Five Dock was somewhere way out west.
I reckon it sounds, he tries to talk it up. He makes it sound fancy, I reckon.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it is pretty fancy over there. Yeah.
Is it? Oh, okay. Alrighty, I did. So you got him near you. Who else you got?
We have Wayward. They're about 3K from our front door. All Hands, which I think is becoming, that's a new Four Pines bar.
I heard about that. Yep.
But again, they're just over the water from us. So
yeah, righty. Yeah. Well, there you go. No idea. I apologize for my ignorance, but I'm not great with the whole Sydney, you know, the whereabouts of where everything is in Sydney. But thanks for explaining that to me. That's great. So you're not in a west. What I forget if he doesn't refer to himself as sort of Midwest or something like that. Does that sound right?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's right for Dave. We fall under Inner West Council. Just
okay. Yep.
We're actually on the Inner West Beer Trail map, albeit on the very edge of the map. but yeah.
And so, what about the future for you guys? What are you? What have you got planned now that things are starting to get back to normal? Are you got any plans around the beers? You know, maybe a couple of those IPAs becoming permanent features, or what's going on?
As far as beers, I mean, I think just churning out new ideas. We're dropping a few more tanks in, which should give us a capacity to do a few more.
You've got room.
Yeah, exactly. Might as well capitalize. focus on a bit more of the weird and wonderful, especially as our tasting room is realized. I don't know. As far as core range expansion, we just sort of, we have ideas. We'll taste a beer that we've put out and said, man, that'd be great. And then talk about it for a while and then work on the next one. We're just sort of taking it day by day.
Well, I guess for most of Australia, that's kind of what we're all doing right now while we work out what's going on with this bloody pandemic. So, you're not alone there, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Great stuff. Well, mate, all the best for the future. It's been really cool to hear about your adventures at White Bay here tonight. Really looking forward to getting up to Sydney at some stage. When I go and visit Dave out at Akasha, I might have to travel those few kilometres and come and check out White Bay as well, because I'm really enjoying what you're doing. I think the can designs look fantastic. And from what I've heard, you are pumping out some fantastic beer. So, mate, thanks for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, and you're welcome anytime.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Thanks for your time. Cool. Cheers.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.